Hey there, and welcome to the Build Me a Brewery podcast. My name is Chris Hayton, and this is part two of the beer packaging segment. In this episode, I meet up with Nick Becker from Convoy Kegs to talk about how they help breweries with rental and leasing options for their keg fleet management. Always having a love of beer, Nick was an investor of the famous Hearts Pub in the Sydney Rocks area, and then following other Hearts Pub owner Mark Feathers to start the Rocks Brewery now over in Alexandria. Nick then found himself working for Kegstar along with founder and multiple beer entrepreneur Adam Tripsmith. Following Kegstar's acquisition by Brambles in 2015, loyalty started to shift with having to adapt to an ever-changing corporate structure and culture, and so Nick followed Adam along with other former Kegstar employees Patrick Hanrahan and Mark Iggins to start Convoy Kegs, which is the new player in the Australian market for keg fleet management. In our chat, we discuss the inner workings of how keg rental and leasing works, plus advice around what is the sweet spot for when breweries should start considering this as an option. This is another great episode that explores another important consideration when it comes to beer packaging. So I hope you enjoy it then, my sit down with Nick Becker from Convoy Kegs. Well, welcome Nick to the Build Me Brewery podcast. Thanks for coming on, mate.
Thanks for having me, Chris. Appreciate it.
No, that's fine, mate. And like I was explaining in our introduction, today's topic is basically keg rental and leasing to the brewing industry. And this is forming part of our packaging segment. So having Chris Kelly on earlier about the mobile canning side. So really want to talk about the keg side of things. So, yeah. And you know, it was a little bit muddy to me before coming into this sort of interview and how it all works. After doing a bit of research, you know, it seems like another great topic to explore for people that are looking at starting a brewery. And we'll obviously get through to some of the sweet spots of where people should be using these kinds of services. But before we do go into all that, mate, love to hear a bit more about how you came into the brewing industry, because I know you've got a pretty good little career in the brewing side. You've come from from all different walks of life, and how you came to be where you are now with Convoy. So if you want to take it from there, mate, that'd be great.
Yeah, sure. Probably been around. I think it was floated to me around beer in late 2008, 2009, when I was actually overseas skiing and got approached by a friend and said, "I've just been made redundant. I'm going to start a beer company." So I was like, "Righto, when I'm finished traveling, I'll have a crack at that with you. I'll come back." Got a job in a pub just to keep the travel bug rolling for a while and help sell beer and go around to beer festivals and whatnot. So that was part of the Rocks Brewing Company with Mark Feathers in the day. That was about 2008, end of 2008, 2009. And then obviously we got involved in a pub in the Rocks called Hearts Pub. And it kind of kicked off from there. I left the other pub job, started the job in Hearts Pub along with selling beer. I went from traveling around selling beer festival to beer festival. Back in the day, there was the Sydney bar shows and all those kind of things that were around that we don't really see too much anymore, or not in the beer side of things, because there's a beer festival almost every weekend. So it started off with that, and back in those days we're going back 12 years ago now. It was like stone and wood were just appearing. Little creatures were probably the crafty side, and I'm not sure if they'd been sold just then, or they might have just been sold to Lion, or maybe not even yet. So it was back in the day. It was pretty young, so it was kind of good, and actually being able to talk to some of those guys, like the Ross Jurisiches from Stone and Wood, you know, to having to talk to them. One, they're trying to sell beer to our pub, and it was two, me picking their brains about how to sell beer to other pubs. So it was kind of a nice way to kick off what was my beer selling career back then. And that turned into to building a brewery. We had five different contract brewing facilities going brewing beer for us at the time. So it was all around Sydney with Mark and Scotty Morgan at the time, brewing beer out of every facility. Some of the guys you've done with Dan Shaw out of the Australian, down at the Illawarra Brewing Company, which was Five Islands back in the day, and all over the place. I think Riverside did some beer for us with Dave Padden. I think it was we're all over the place, but it got to the point where we were producing too much that we needed to build a brewery. So we, built what is now Rocks Brewing Company down in Alexandria, which was a bit of fun. And I turned into the operations guy, moving beer around the country rather than selling it as much. So we put in a sales team And I did a couple of years of that, and then got to the point where it was time to move on and try different things and work with different people. And that's when I joined the supplier side of the industry and went to the dark side, so to speak, and ended up with Kegstar after Sam Maitland, who was the sales guy, and I caught up, who used to be at McLaren Vale Beer, went back in sales rep days when we were caught up at pubs. So he was the sales guy at Kegstar at the time and dragged me into it. And that was kind of it for me on the supplier side. I really enjoyed visiting other people's breweries and giving advice on where I could help them grow. And it was a relationship thing for me. It wasn't just kegs. Kegs were pretty easy, but relationships amongst the industry have been probably the building blocks of why I really love this industry, because all of the people here have supported and helped, and we've all grown together, and you can see where that's got to. A couple of years, three and a bit years at Kegstar, and a few of us under the Brambles banner, and a few of us decided that once Adam Tripp-Smith, who started Kegstar, once he left, it was starting to feel like the walls were caving in a bit, and it was getting tighter and tighter, so we had a crack at starting something ourselves, and that's when Convoy kicked off. 2019, July 2019. So we're now about 18 months old. And in a one-player market, we've just created a second player, which has kept everyone honest, really.
Mm.
So that's kind of my beer career. It went from selling beer to managing and owning part of a pub into the supply side.
Any home brewing stories, backyard brewing?
No, I don't have a lot of home brewing stuff, to be honest. I probably left that to the professionals back in the day. I've done a fair few brews in my time, but I did a little. My first one was at what is now, I think it's Four Pines now, but the Joel James Squire Brewery down at Darling Harbour.
Okay,
I did a little brew for the for a 4th of July beer, actually, funnily enough. But that was probably my first actual mash in, dig out, do everything on a little 1,000-litre kit. So no home brewing, but I've done quite a bit over the time. But probably, like, I grew up in Adelaide, so Little Creatures, Cooper's Pale Ale back in the day, and then Southwark Pale Ale back when I first started drinking were probably two beers that stemmed where my beer taste buds were going. And then I think it wasn't until I moved to Sydney in 2001 where James Squire's Amber Ale was just starting.
Oh, yeah.
But when Little Creatures Bright Ale came out, that was probably my epiphany beer that, you know what, there's more to beer than light lager.
And
what we were drinking back in the day. So
yeah.
That kind of pushed me down the route of trying different beers and moving towards, and that was early 2000s. So that probably then went to, you know, James Squire Golden Ales, and then Stone and Wood came out, Four Pines started appearing, a few of those other breweries came on. So while I haven't done a lot of brewing, I've kind of that's where my beer timeline kind of went towards hoppier ales, so to speak.
It's interesting to hear, like, because Little Creatures come up quite a lot, you know, about, like, they to me are, you know, some of the trailblazers when it comes to craft in Australia in modern day.
But
it's like when you first tried a Little Creatures, it would have tasted really hoppy and, you know, really different. And now with the beers that are available in the Australian market for craft, it's like, well, it's not nowhere near as hoppy as what's coming out now. Totally. So,
and if you drink a little, like, I remember going to Perth a couple of years ago for the first time and went down to Fremantle and had a bright ale out of the brewery, and I'd been in beer for a while then. So it was like, not sure if the beer's changed or if my taste buds had moved on and changed, but it wasn't the fruity hoppiness that it used to. It might still well be, but it probably hasn't changed that much. But I think our palates have changed.
Yeah, absolutely.
Still a good beer, but it wasn't that bang in your mouth like that after drinking a Tui's New went to something that had hops in it with fruity hops. Certainly put me on that. And then going down the Stone and Wood, when Stone and Wood first came on Galaxy hops, it was like, oh, wow.
I think the first time I tried Stone and Wood was at the Dove and Olive, actually.
Yeah, right.
When they had on tap there, and, well, they still do, but, blown away by that.
It was just a cracking beer, and it still is. And even though they've gone through iterations of different size breweries and then moved their way up to a pretty big facility in Llewellyn Bar there. The beer's still bloody good.
It's yeah.
Still sticks to its traditions.
Yeah. Well, talking about, you mentioned about our palates have changed. And in the previous segment where I had in equipment sourcing side of things, had Neil Playfoot, who's well-known in the Asian and Chinese market for brewery consulting, and he's talking about that they're not quite at the same palate as what the Australian market is, and which they were talking about different cultures and how different palates like different types of beers.
Yeah.
So, in China, Hefeweizens are one of the best sellers.
Yeah, right.
The wheaty type beer.
The original hazy.
Yeah. So, and they were saying that the Chinese market and Asian markets, they're just not ready for really heavily hop beers yet.
Yeah, right.
So, yeah, it's interesting how different markets are sort of different to the palates. But like I was saying in the introduction and earlier that, you know, you've got a pretty good brewing background and you now made that jump over to, like you said, the dark side or the other side of the table where you're the supplier of in the keg business. So Convoy is fairly new to the market still, 18 months. Cracking on. So, and you've all come from that Kegstar background, foundation of the business Convoy. And you've already talked a bit about how you guys got started and being in operation, but tell us a bit about the services you do offer, locations, you know, the types of clientele, and take it from there.
Yeah, sure. Obviously, beer is the focus, and the craft beer side of things has predominantly been our customer base, but we do beer, cider, wine, seltzer these days, cocktails, tonic water. We just had a customer sign up for doing tonic water. So it's spanning what draft products are on tap, right? So we're getting more and more experimental. And I think the more the hotel side of things are starting to loosen what the old contracts were with the Lion and the CUBs of the world and starting to experiment with other things on tap. So that's expanding our customer base and reach.
Yep.
Which is pretty good, but we're still heavily predominantly with beer.
Mm.
And that's still heavily on a 50-litre keg. 50-litre A-type keg is what our predominant sales are. But we do offer a 30-litre slim A-type keg as well, which definitely helps for the wine side of things, the cocktail side of things, and the other things on tap other than beer. The smaller vessel definitely helps. But it also helps for beer. Now that we have reduced the tax excise on a 30-litre keg, it's definitely helping some of those brewers get into more maybe smaller locations, small bars that don't go through beer as quickly, and also putting those higher ABV beers that are not the fast movers, the slower movers, into a smaller vessel that just helps the freshness, basically.
Mm.
So. And especially for under-counter beer systems or ambience systems that are around the place, moving through beer quickly is a big thing for freshness.
Yeah. And can you explain for the audience how keg rental works?
Yeah, sure. Basically came about, for people that don't know, it's a bit like your gas bottle swap and go at the service station, right?
Yeah.
When you don't want to go and buy the keg outright, somewhere between 100 and 150 bucks, depending on what it is, how you, what size, what vessel, what valves on it, and where you get it from, and how many you're ordering. So rather than employing a hell of a lot of capital into buying a keg fleet, then we're kind of offering just a simple rental solution where we deliver you order on the day you need them, you clean and fill them, and then basically send them out to market, and then we do the collection, so you forget about it. There's a fairly high attrition rate for kegs. Somewhere between 5 and 10% of kegs get lost every year. No one can tell us exactly what it is, but when you ask anyone in the industry, they throw their hands up in the air and say somewhere between 5 and 10%. So to lose a depreciating asset at a fairly high rate for someone that's also capital intensive, for a small brewery that, you know, wants to spend that money on sales guys and marketing, on branding and all that stuff. And you just want to set and forget. So what we offer is basically you order, we deliver, you send out to venues, and we do the collection. Mm. And it becomes a simple process, and you order when you need to. But it also means that the brewery can start small and scale up. And we have this funny thing in Australia called the double peak, which is Christmas and summer, compared to the Northern Hemisphere that has summer in the middle of the year.
Yep.
So we have this really high peak at Christmas where you need more kegs than you do in wintertime. Mm. So for us, you can just scale it up. You can just order more and then order less in wintertime. So you don't need to hold this keg fleet that you might need. I don't know, somewhere in the industry says that you need, for every full keg, you need 5 or 6 or 7 empties. So it's a fairly capital intensive.
Oh, yeah, I'm learning that. And right. I think a lot of people in the podcast.
Stainless steel isn't cheap, it's only getting more expensive. Yeah. At the moment, with COVID, I think we had a bit of a price drop in stainless, but that's coming back pretty quickly. But it's pretty capital intensive for the small brewery that wants to invest in equipment. Get your beer right first. Get everything right on that side of things, and you can stick it in a keg anytime you like. So that's kind of what our offering was, and it's definitely helping a lot of those smaller breweries now, and bigger breweries that have grown with us scale up and scale down when they need.
Mm. You mentioned a couple reasons of why a brewery should engage a service like Convoy, attrition rate with kegs going lost and all that.
Yep.
We were talking a bit offline about why should a brewery go through a service like Convoy keg rental rather than owning their own kegs? And are you able to go through in a bit more deeper answer into that?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah,
I think every brewery has started with the idealistic thing that I want my brand on a keg. I would say there's not many breweries out there that don't have some kegs of their own, which is perfect for start up in your own, if you're serving beer at your own venue, that brew pub style. It depends on where you want to go. I think if you set your targets of this is what I need to do to keep my brewery alive, this is how many kegs I need to sell, this is how many cases I need to sell, this is what I need to do, set that parameter with the results in mind, and then work back on, right, how many kegs do I need, right, and then look at what that costs.
Mm.
And if that means you're just selling kegs within your own facility, take into consideration that loss of attrition rate, the cost of freight, getting them back to you from where they're coming from. If you take all that because you're only selling them in your own place, pretty good idea just to buy a few kegs and keep them rotating through, right? Not losing them. You can utilize them a lot and it becomes pretty simple. As soon as you start sending them out to other venues, the attrition rate goes up.
Mm.
So if you're sending them just to your own little local suburb that you're running around collecting your own yourself, you're probably pretty good. You start sending them out to Sydney Metro or Newcastle or then interstate, all of a sudden, it takes a lot longer to get your kegs back, therefore you need more, but you start losing them a lot more.
Yeah.
So that's where Convoy comes in. So there's a lot of breweries out here that let's take Batch, for example, in the Inner West, that they deliver their own kegs generally, so they keep this pool of kegs that they deliver to their local area, and then they use Convoy or a rental system for everywhere else, anywhere interstate, anywhere regionally or that's outside their reach.
Yeah. Okay.
So there's a few different scenarios around what the best scenario is, but there's definitely a sweet spot between owning a certain number and then renting a certain number to send out, not lose.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
There's also the hassles when you're in the brewery of running two different fleets. How many do I fill into my own kegs? How many do I put into rentals? So that becomes a bit of a logistical nightmare too. And a lot of those guys that have had kegs in the past, Young Henrys, they ended up selling their kegs to Kegstar back in the day and have gone to a full rental model because they know that was just an easier operational model for them.
Mm.
So it depends. Stone and Wood run a really, really tight network around that Northern Rivers area, so they run their own kegs there. But in other states, they use a rental.
Mm.
There's a lot of different things for different breweries, and it depends what your route to market is or what your end game is and how that looks.
Mm. And I guess to use as an example, and we've had many consultants come on and brewery owners talk about what the sweet spot is for people opening a brewery these days. And it seems to be around that 500 litre type brew house, brew pub type model. I mean, it seems to be a growing trend. It's an easy way to enter the market, start out, access those higher margins in your tap room.
Yeah.
You know, I've got ambitions to open up a brew pub to begin with, but with plans that anticipating good growth, people, the beer being received really well, maybe expanding that into some distribution of my beer. So what sort of advice would you give someone about managing their kegs around that or the packaging side?
Yeah. for starters, I've never seen a brewery go to a smaller brew house.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can afford to go bigger, mm-hmm. go bigger,
mm-hmm.
because you'll always have growth.
Yep.
Even if it's within your own facility, in your own brew pub, in either you can afford to go slightly bigger, do it.
Yep.
There's my advice to start with. I've never seen another brewery go, oh, that was too big, we should go down.
Yeah, and I'm hearing the exact same. I think probably the Rocks guys were maybe the only ones. I don't know if that was the system that was bigger.
We put more tanks in. That was more tanks and more tanks. Then it's about going back to your end game. What results do you need? How much revenue do you need to keep your business open?
Yep.
Right. How does that relate to how many kegs I need to sell versus how many cases I need to sell? Versus,
yep.
You know, so start with the end game in mind of how much money do I need?
Yeah.
And then work back on how many kegs do I need? How many cases do I need to sell per week, per month, whatever that is, and then decide on what system.
Yeah, that's good advice. Yeah. Right. Well, and listen, I probably have ambitions to go bigger than the 500, but, you know, I'd like to think anywhere up to the 20 hex side of things, but what I'm hearing is that brew pub model, 500 litre, anything below that, I think Neil Cameron's saying is a commercial nightmare.
Yeah.
So, but, yeah, managing your kegs around that, how
– Totally.
Yeah.
If you're looking at a 500 litre kit that's just for your own brew pub, then you can go down the leasing or owning model, and you can lease kegs for $5 a month ish type thing on a lease type model, and then at the end of it there'll be a buyout, a bit like your car, right?
Yep.
So it ends up costing you more over the long term, but it's frees up some cash flow up front.
Yeah.
At Convoy, we offer a brew pub model, so that you pay the full keg rental to go when it goes in, but then if you reuse it, then it's only an $8 reuse fee. So you might sit on that keg empty in the back of the warehouse for a month and then refill it, and it's only another eight bucks to refill. And the technology on that automatically detects when it's being cleaned and filled, so it'll automatically create a billing cycle, so to speak. So there's no manual interaction or human interference that needs to happen around that. It just does it.
Mm.
So there's a few different ways of skinning that, I guess. But if it's, as I went back to earlier, if you've got a brew pub and you are literally only going to sell kegs in your brew pub and you can cycle them, then it's a good thing just to own a few.
Yeah,
yep.
And when you're looking at expanding,
as soon as you send them out, you'll start losing them.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, because you've got more control over it. It's just been sold in your brewery or a couple local pubs here and there.
Yeah.
You know, why not run your own?
If you're walking it back from your tap room to the back shed, then you're not going to lose it.
Yeah,
yeah. It's not going to get turned into a barbecue. It's not going to get turned into a homebrew kit from someone.
Yeah. Okay. And the market for keg rental, talking about Kegstar being probably one of the other major players in this space. Is there any others that sort of play in the keg rental business?
Not really. No, not in the pooling business as such, or leasing. You can finance money anywhere, right? The cost of money is pretty cheap at the moment. You can finance through a few different places, but no one actually does keg leasing or keg pooling other than Kegstar and ourselves.
Mm.
No, we're the only two. We've got our offices obviously here where we're sitting, but we've got a guy on the road in Melbourne, Tom Maddams, who was ex Cryomalt, been around the industry for a long time. We've got a sales girl in Perth, Claire, who's just gone on maternity leave. So we've got people around the country that look after their areas and make sure there's someone on the ground visiting customers, making sure that everything's going right. It's all about deliveries and logistics. The keg, it's a piece of stainless steel, right? A few things can go wrong with the valves and whatnot. But other than that, it's about making sure that customers get them on time, making sure they forecast on time, and making sure that we can deliver when they need it.
Yeah, okay. And what would you say, you might have mentioned earlier in the piece a bit about the differences between you and Kegstar and other services, but what, I mean, I guess an opportunity for you to create the whole sales pitch, what would you say is the main difference between Kegstar and Convoy?
Yeah, look. We offer the same. It's the same keg. It's the same. Everything about it is the same. Where we differ is probably just the pricing model and some of the technology. All of our kegs have got what we call our Keg Fox tracking beacon on them, and that's part of another service we can go into later. But essentially we're a fixed price model. So you get what you pay for. Mm. You understand that at the moment, our for a casual renter, our price is $23.95 for a keg. So you can get that delivered to your brewery, and you know exactly where your cost of goods are. Kegstar have a cheaper issue fee, and then they charge a daily rental fee until someone has to scan it to a venue, and that stops the billing cycle. So while it sounds cheaper up front, there's all these add-on costs that you get hit with later on. So there's a regional fee. So if you scan it to a regional pub, you get charged another $6. If you get charged, if you hold it for 3 months, you get charged another $6. If you lose it, you get charged another. So there's all these add-ons that you actually at the end of the month, you're like, I actually don't know what cost me to get a keg. So that's when we started Convoy. There's a lot of good things about Kegstar. Don't get me wrong. I'm not here to Kegstar bash, that's for sure. But we took what was good and what was bad and tried to remove some of the bad things by technology and creating this fixed price model, which is what we were listening to from the industry, coming back going, we don't know our cost of goods. We have to go through this statement that looks like a telephone book. It's hard to exactly know what we're going on with. So we've just kind of removed a bit of that stuff and just made it simple. Mm. Our philosophy when we came in was like, how do we make this much simpler for everyone?
Yeah.
That we don't have to scan. There's no daily rental fees, so they know their cost of goods. And that's it. It's simple. Mm. As long as you order in time, you'll get the kegs in time and you can send them out to market and we know what your price is. Now we do some agreement deals for long-term contracts and guys that go exclusively with us, and they get a discount and they get guaranteed supply. So we offer some discounts back from there, based on volume and average length or days to market, so to speak. So that's the big difference. We're a fixed cost. Our technology is on the keg that allows us not to have scanning, and then we don't charge a lost fee or other fees associated with it. That's it. It is what it is.
And you mentioned about the tracking technology, KegFox. That forms part of the Internet of Things. Is that how it's been described? Yeah.
So it's a device. You can see it on the top of the keg there, that black little box on top of the keg. It's a device that basically searches for Wi-Fi signals around the country and then triangulates a couple of Wi-Fi signals onto a Google database and sends that message of the location back to our home base, basically.
Oh, well, yeah.
So it's pretty cool. It's been around for a while, the technology, but it hasn't been probably good enough to be on a moving object. They use them a lot on gas meters to read and a lot of static objects. So it hasn't been used on a something that moves quite often as a keg. So we've spent a fair bit of time in the early days going through what a keg does. And it's surprising how fast you fill up a whiteboard when you actually determine what a keg does, what movements it does, why it tilts, why it goes upside down, what temperature it goes through, how many chemicals it hits, how many times it drops down a cellar, what it bounces, what it does. You fill up a whiteboard pretty quickly on why the technology should wake up when it needs to wake up, send a message when it needs to send, and then send a temperature when it needs to send. So that's part of the other offering of it. For Convoy, we just want it to tell us where it is so we don't lose them. But for the brewer, they get the benefits of cycling what their supply chain is doing so they can see their kegs in live and see where they are, what they're doing, where they're at a venue, and at what temperature they're at.
Yeah, wow, okay.
So it's pretty cool, the back end of that, of what we can start offering. So that's all being built. There's a lot of right now we can do temperature and location. Now we're building through. Now we've had them on the kegs for a couple of months. We're now building through what cycle times look like, how long the average brewer holds their kegs for before they sell them, how long they sit at a venue for, how long they sit at their warehouse for. Is the warehouse keeping them cold for a start? Are you getting what you pay for? Is the warehouse doing first in, first out, and then moving older stock first rather than sending out newer stock and old stock's not sitting there? There's a whole lot of things that the technology is actually going to provide brewers as a value add.
Yeah, no, I only looked at the tracking capability when I was doing my research. I wasn't aware of, that sounds like a massive added benefit to, because I've heard a lot of people talk about, beer quality, especially when it's being shipped around the country. Well, who's handling that for you, and are they experienced and professional enough? And because there's nothing worse than one of your kegs going out to a pub And, you know, a customer having what they thought was their favourite beer and tasting stale and oxidised.
Yep.
And, yeah, I guess I never really consider that. And that would give brewers a lot more peace of mind.
Yeah, they can, through our portal, they can drill into keg down to the individual keg level and actually go through when it got to the venue, what temperature it sat at the venue.
Mm.
And then so they can actually delve into a lot more of the history of, since they've had that keg, since there's been beer in it, like what's it actually gone through. So it gives them a hell of a lot of power to come back to, you know, when they get, if they get a, probably good for product recalls, if there's any issues with beer, you can actually delve into and put in the batch code that's in that keg,
yeah,
put it in the system and it'll spark where kegs are from that batch. So you can, product recalls pretty easy. Individual keg issues can be pretty simple to search the keg number, where is it, what's its history, and then why is it an issue with the beer or is it just an individual isolated issue? There's a whole lot of things that they will be able to delve into.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, it definitely will help with, you know, like if you are having quality issues in certain parts of the country and people picking up the phone complaining, well, you can look at all that data and say, well, you're not storing the kegs at the right temperature or you can get on the phone straight to them and say, hey, make sure it's served at this temperature. And does it do, well, probably not that sophisticated, well, maybe you can prove me wrong, carbonation levels and all that as well?
No, it doesn't go into that because it really just sits on top of the keg and it's really about the signal. So once you're down into it, once you're down into a cellar,
it picks up the external stuff.
Yeah. Picks up external temperature and ambient temperature of where the keg's sitting.
Mm.
To measure stuff inside the keg means you need to add something in there, a probe or a. So while we're always looking at opportunities to figure out the best and the next level, at the moment there's nothing that you can put inside a keg to determine at the moment volume of the keg. There's some external measures around volumes, but nothing internal or anything like carbonation level. None of that yet.
No. Well, I had PK from Beer 30. Yes. Do you know those guys?
Yeah, yep. He's a good guy.
Yeah, so he came on and explained a bit about some of their software and I'm sure that their software, because there's more brew house, you know, sort of geared. So, but it's amazing how, like, hearing about all the different technology that and equipment that's come out for the brewing industry and how it's helped with quality and how it automation and, you know, because that's what brewers are always looking for, trying to reduce brew times and have more time to sell their beer and talk about beer. You know, I don't want to be doing these 14, 15-hour days. Maybe in the beginning I'll have to, but but if there's a way that if it's in my budget and I can sort of get more peace of mind, the set-forget type path, then, yeah, I'd love to explore all that.
Totally. I've spent a bit of time talking to PK pre-COVID when we were allowed to have conventions and all sorts and BrewCon, and with the technology we'll do some integration with other companies for sure. So that and the beauty of it is that we'll be able to integrate with through APIs into any sort of NetSuite or other accounting softwares that breweries run, whether it's Beer 30 or if it's NetSuite or if it's whatever. It'll just be an API that will be able to get that data and present it the way they want to.
Mm.
It's not all about how we want to present it. They might want it differently. So that's part of, outside of keg pooling, that's the next part of the business, is to offer the keg tracking, which is called catch asset tracking, which is our business offset, is to offer that as a tracking service for companies that do own their own kegs. So if you do have a keg fleet and you don't want to lose it, well, then you can at least put a beacon on it and you can track it through the software that we've provided.
Mm. Yeah. Completely unaware of all the capabilities. I've purely just thought it was a tracking sort of capability. And that sounds like a primary cell there. But, I mean, yeah, all those added things, you know, it will put a brewer's mind at ease.
Totally. I think if you can move your kegs quicker, if you can move your beer quicker through your supply chain and have more utilization out of your keg and not lose it, then you're going to get better value out of that asset.
Mm.
100%.
Perfect. Moving on to industry insights. So always like to get guests' point of view on how they see the brewing industry, where it's going, new things coming on the market. And you being a guest from a different, you know, part of the brewing industry, we've had the brewers on, we've had people in finance and accounting and equipment sourcing, consulting. So, you know, want to get more insights around packaging or, you know, just your general thoughts on the craft beer industry or beer industry in Australia.
Yeah, totally. It's been a it's obviously been a funny 12 months with COVID and how that's, I guess, adjusted and pivoted all those buzzwords that you like to use around making changes. And definitely we saw through COVID with kegs and pubs closed, we definitely went from going accelerating really well to actually doing zero for a couple of months. And then it started to pick back up and it's dropped and changed. And as different states have gone into lockdown and Melbourne going into lockdown, it's kind of gone up and down in waves for the last probably 7 months. So that's been an interesting process, but it's also, there's not too many times where you start a business and then 7 months later you get told to shut down, 8 months later you get told to shut down. So we spent a fair bit of time reflecting on what the first 6 or 7 or 8 months looked like and making our own adjustments and pivoting ourselves. And even though we weren't getting kegs out the door for that couple of months, we definitely had some self-reflection on where we can go, where we can do better, and what our offering looks like. So it definitely gave us a chance to breathe, relax, figure out exactly where we're going and re-enter the market now that it's now firing back up. So we're pulling on customers left, right, and center. So I think we did some good stuff there, made life, like I said earlier, made it just more simple for people, more simple for brewers, more simple for their operations. And while we had a pretty tight summer on kegs, which is that double peak, I think we've definitely learned some lessons around from COVID and through making sure that you get forecasting right and get all those things right through that. As for the industry, there's definitely breweries out there that have done very well through that COVID period, pivoting towards packaging.
Yeah.
Definitely it helps that some of the major retailers have put their, probably some of their, they've changed some of their rules. They're paying quicker, and like the Dan Murphys of the world, the BWSs, all those, they really helped push that local. They reduced their payment terms. So they've really helped some of those local guys get their packaging out into more stores quicker.
Yeah, well, okay.
Which was amazing. It was great. Mm. So all the, and everyone went to their own online store quickly, and everyone saw heaps of cash coming in quickly. That's definitely petered off now. We're definitely seeing less and less. However, the bottle shops are still doing quite well. But we're still, the CBD is only 50% full at the moment in Melbourne and Sydney. So we're not back to peak here. The pubs in here are still, and there's still restrictions on 4 square meters, and I think that reduces to 2 sometime in the next week or so. But we're still seeing less people in pubs because they're not allowed to be there.
Mm.
So will the draft market come back? Yeah, 100%. Yeah. And will some of those breweries that have kind of relied on the cans and the packaging need to come back a bit towards draft? Yeah, 100%. I absolutely, without doubt, now that pubs and clubs will come back on, people will start, will buy less from the bottle shops back, and they'll spend some of their dollars in the bars and clubs and pubs.
Yeah.
So I think draft will come back at some point. I hope they still, now that they're in those bottle shops, I hope that creates much more awareness for the general public to go and buy more craft or independent or however you want to deem it. But I still think that the draft market, there's plenty available.
Yeah, I definitely think people will start coming back to it. As like you said, the cities open up and the pubs open up more. But I also do feel like people are looking towards just having beers at home as well still. So it's hard to tell from which angles where it's going to take bites out of certain parts of the industry, you know what I mean, whether it's going to be kegs or whether it's going to be packaging. But, you know, I know for myself I'd prefer a beer poured from a tap.
Yep.
So I think there's always going to be that element where people will miss rather than just cracking open a can and all that.
Yeah, but, totally.
You know, I've also heard a lot of thoughts around how homebrewing's made a massive resurgence as well. So
that doesn't surprise me at all. And the cost of, I mean, beers, it's not the cheapest, especially when we're talking about, you know, a hell of a lot of hops going into beer. Hops not the cheapest ingredient, but it's definitely I think the draft market, when you're out at a pub drinking, you're drinking with mates, you probably have three or four more than you would at home by yourself, potentially. I don't know. That's probably me coming into it. I've got two young kids too. So.
Oh, don't worry, mate. You're not alone.
but definitely going out to the pub on Friday night, which I haven't been to the pub for a while because, I probably had four or five or six or eight more than I probably would have at home with a mate, that's for sure.
Yeah.
So, look, I think there's definitely and then there's more brew pubs opening around the place. There's more locations to go to. There's more destination places, which is – I think it's amazing. There's I was just up at Six String the other day, but there's another couple of breweries that are popping up on the Central Coast. There's one at Lake Macquarie now. There's a few up in Newcastle, and all of a sudden they're popping up all over the place, which is for regional locations, even down South Coast like Jarvis Bay and
I know that Neil Cameron's opened one up there.
Towards Berry Way or somewhere.
Yeah,
there.
Yep. Yeah, that's so quite a lot
up.
Of
they're good popping little... up, and you can pop through. Trying to think, Cupid's down the south coast. There's a whole lot wherever you go.
Flaming Galah. I think Galar. They're down at Huskisson.
Yeah,
I think.
So wherever you go, those destination breweries are around the place. Which, I mean, they'll still need kegs because they want to put kegs into their local market, right? So there's still a draft market out there for sure. 100%.
Yeah. And any new and exciting equipment that you've seen that's sort of coming out on the market in regards to packaging?
I think probably over the last couple of years, I think just the introduction of smaller canning lines, the ability or the access that smaller brewers can get to what was once only a major brewery piece of equipment, like a centrifuge, like even small pasteurizers, like canning lines, all of that stuff that's come down into that micro level is just going to make craft beer or indie beer, however you want to determine it, is more accessible and better quality.
Because that's what's hindered some craft smaller breweries is shelf life, isn't it? Because that's what the big boys have had over them, not just volume and automation and efficiencies of getting the product out there and being economies of scale being cheaper, but pasteurization is where you can then start entering those international markets as well, isn't it?
Yeah, so, definitely. Mm. I think all of that being accessible to smaller breweries, it's all capital, right? So you'll definitely need more cash, but you don't need millions. Now you just need hundreds of thousands, right? To get a good proper quality setup to create quality beer. I think it's all really accessible. As for like Chris from East Coast, having accessibility to have someone turn up at your doorstep with a canning line, how easy is that? Back in the day, it just wasn't possible. You had to go and contract brew your beer somewhere else to put it in bottles if you didn't have a bottling line, or cans weren't even a thing when we were doing it. So to have that available and to watch how they've grown, and I don't know how many canning lines they've got now, half a dozen, it's great business.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. I think in terms of other equipment, I haven't – they're probably the ones that jump off the shelf to me is that everything's becoming just a lot more accessible for the smaller brewer.
Yeah, yeah. We've gotten a couple of different guests' opinions on cans versus bottles. What's your opinion?
Yeah, I think cans are here to stay for sure. There's still a place in the market for bottles around. The restaurant market's definitely still keen on bottles, but cans aren't going anywhere. Where do I sit in quality-wise? I don't know. I think I've heard a few different opinions, but cans seem to be. They don't get any light. They try and the DO these days is a hell of a lot better than what it used to be.
Yeah.
So I think cans in terms of quality. I like drinking out of a can. I have no issue with it.
But, I never used to. I always went the bottle route over a can like 5+ years ago. But yeah, and some people have mentioned that we've been led down the path of by a glass company saying it tastes better out of a bottle or it's better out of a bottle. But I think Pat from Willie the Boatman said it sits in a keg. If it sits in a can, it's almost,
same thing.
Same really. Thing, yeah.
So. No, I like cans. And I think in what we deal with in terms of kegs, freight is a massive component. And the fact that you're shipping around lighter containers, you can put more beer on a pallet per litre. It's cheaper to get around and it's lighter. It's more cost effective. I think cans are here to stay for sure. And it's a pretty simple solution. The fact that you can get a blank can that you don't have to order think back when you originally needed to order cans, you had to order 100,000 or 50,000 units printed. Now that you can order blank cans with stickers and there's a hell of a lot more options. Once again, going down that, there's just an easier accessibility for smaller players to get into a market that's available.
Mm.
I think that it's all becoming easier, which is perfect.
Mm. Beer trends, where do you see, we've got the hazies, sours, low alcohol, no alcohol, seltzers. Mm. Seltzers making a big push. Never even really heard of seltzers before I started doing this podcast. That's becoming a big thing.
Seltzers are it's a bit of a beast, isn't it? And with White Claw in the States now coming over here and all the seltzers that are popping up around the place. Is it here? I don't know if it's here to stay.
But can it be deemed a beer?
I guess it is technically a beer because it's made with those ingredients, right? Mm. And it's still taxed as a beer. It's still a beer. Trends? I don't know. I feel like there's a bit of a trend going back to craft lagers, right? It's the hardest beer to make, lager. You can find all the faults in it. Mm-hmm. You can't hide it in hops and malt, dark malts and specialties. So I think there's a couple of good lagers out there that are starting to pop up.
I had Two Birds lager. a couple of weeks ago. Very nice.
Yeah, right.
Very nice. I don't know if it's got a certain name to it, Blue Label, but I had it at a local pub in Penrith. But and Dan from The Australian mentioned that their craft lagers is, with more flavour, still with that crisp sort of look and mouthfeel, but they, I think, got some good Mexican lagers on tap.
Mexican lager's phenomenal.
Yeah.
Can't even remember what it's called now. It's a Mexican name.
Lager or something. Six
Brothers or something it's called out of that, after the Colosimo guys. But that's a cracking lager. I loved it. I agree that I think Akasha's Tradewind lager that was just had a bit of hoppiness to it and was – They don't sell much, but I think it's because everyone sees the lager name, and that's the majority of the beer drank in Australia is a lager. So I think if we can get some good lagers out there, I think there's definitely space for that.
Yeah, forward. Yeah, I love my lagers, but I've grown to love the flavors of craft beer as well. And I had a Carlton Draft the other day just because that's what I grew up with, and that was my favorite beer growing up. But now I had it the other day, just thought, I've got a whole heap of Bolters in the fridge and Bolters on the tap, Stonewood's on the tap, but I'll have a Carlton Draft, and I just think, gosh, why did I ever go back?
It gets a bit like that sometimes.
Sometimes I've had Reshes.
I've had I don't know where it was, but it was at the pub and there wasn't a lot of options. I was like, I'll have a Reshes. I was like, this is all right. I can deal with this.
Yeah.
It was just had a little bit of that extra maltiness or a little bit something different.
Yeah.
Didn't have that. I don't know, there's that taste that from over pasteurizing or something. I don't know what it is, but that was all right. But I think, there's some good beers definitely out there. I feel like I always go back to a pale ale or an XPO, whatever fits into that category of pale ale.
Yeah, sessionable stuff.
I grew up on pale ale, and I think if I determine what the breweries like by their pale ale these days.
Yeah.
I think that's probably my go to.
Mm.
And now that, with a couple of young kids and driving everywhere, it's tough to have too many of those big. I don't get to try too many IPAs and double IPAs.
No. I got my wife's into cider right now. She used to be a big beer drinker, but she sort of changes her palate from time to time. Wanted some cider, so loves the dry cider side of things, not the real sweet stuff. Got some Willy Bone Dry Cider.
Yeah, and how bone dry is that?
I didn't realize it was 7.2%. Just had a kid, so he's in between feeding the kid and all that. And so, here's a cider, it's 7.2, 1.9 standard drinks. My fucking hell.
Solid. So, they make some good cider down at Willie Smith's. Have you been down there?
No.
Cracking cidery. Yeah. Good place.
Yeah, it's probably a big gap in my learning ciders. Loved the Strongbows over in the UK.
Yep.
Another dry cider fan, but and the Magnus and the Bulmers, but. Yeah, can't say. I've never homebrewed a cider either.
I think it's harder. Neil Cameron's probably the one to talk to again about putting cider in kegs and making it stable.
Yeah.
I think it's the sugar and the yeast. I'd like to have like to re-ferment every now and then, so it's about having a crack at that.
Yeah, perfect. But,
yeah.
All right, well, coming towards the end, mate, any closing thoughts and advice on the keg rental or packaging side?
there's always some things. But as I said earlier, I think if you're starting a brewery, and I think that's where we're leading to with this podcast, is if you're looking to get into it, then start with your end goal in mind of how much do I need to sell to actually make it feasible to start a business, and then work back from there. And if that means kegs, and kegs sell volume quicker. So when you start a brewery, selling 50 litres, you know, that's seven cases you got to sell, six and a half, seven cases for one keg. So to go out and sell that one keg can be easier.
Mm.
And then go back, pull that back into how many kegs I need, and then figure out how much do I want to invest in the brewery? Do I want to invest in kegs, or do I want to do some leasing? Where am I going to sell my beer? And then determine what the best route to market for you guys, for you is. Is it delivering your own kegs? How do you value your own time? You know, it's a big thing. I don't think anyone values their own time as much as they should.
Mm.
And what you could be doing in that time to promote your business rather than just delivering kegs.
Mm.
And collecting kegs and trying to find them and all that time. So I've been in that brewery side where we've owned my own keg fleet before keg rentals were a part of it. I've been on the keg on the brewery side where I've rented kegs. I'm still finding, even though I've been out of the brewery side, I'm still seeing Rock Brewing kegs popping up in Tasmania, in Perth, and that are now tables and chairs.
Oh, right.
So you know, it's hard unless you've got someone dedicated to doing it.
Yeah.
It's hard to chase, and I think you'll probably find most brewers will say that, and most brewers will say, "No, I don't want to do it anymore," because it's hard. Mm. It is actually hard to locate and make sure you're not spending more money on something that you're going to lose that depreciates.
Mm.
So there's definitely a place for when you're starting up, just to feel the market, feel what you want to do, and then invest in some rental kegs or some leased kegs or however you want to go. But definitely look at that end game in mind and what your route to market's going to be. Are you going to go interstate? Are you going to go outside your local area? Are you going to use distributors? Are you going to sell it within your own pub?
Mm.
I think that will help you determine what path you need to take, whether you use serving tanks in your own facility or kegs. Like, you know, you still need, when there's only 100 litres left out of your 500 litre serving tank, what do you do with it?
Yeah.
Right. How do you spin it? Do you have to keg it off? Do you know? So there's a few different ways to go down, but the keg rental market has definitely just made life simpler and made it easier route to market and entry point for breweries. So I think that's where we do quite well. And I think with Convoy, we've kind of just made it simple. You know what your cost is. You know what it is. Just make it part of your cost of goods and part of your operational expenses.
Yeah,
and you can get out there and not have to worry about losing it or collecting it or whatever.
Mm.
And then you get to gather some intel along the way. So I think that's probably my advice in terms of the keg side of the business.
Yeah, well, that's probably my biggest surprising takeaway is like the capabilities of that technology you have with the KegFox, all the data that you can collect from it. So, but no, sound advice there, mate. And it's another avenue that I didn't think of before going into this podcast project and brewery planning project. So I really appreciate you sharing your time and thoughts on the packaging side. It's going to complement the Chris Kelly episode and, you know, seeing both sides of packaging. But if people want to learn more, mate, where do they sort of reach?
Thanks. Jump on the website convoykegs.com or send us an email, convoy@convoykegs.com. And one of the guys or myself will be back to you pretty quickly with some options and have a chat through. I think, you know, apart from price, there's a whole lot of other things that we can offer in terms of advice. And we've all been around the brewing industry for a long time.
Mm.
So it's pick our brains. We're here for a chat. Kegs are simple. We're here for the relationships and we're here for a long time. It's part of the industry we love. I think Adam would say the same thing, that he's got himself back into the industry because it's a place we like, it's the people we like, for sure.
Perfect. Well, everyone, that was Nick Becker from Convoy Kegs. Thanks for coming on the podcast, mate.
Thank you, mate. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to the Build Me a Brewery podcast. That was part two and the final episode of the beer packaging segment. Our next segment, we move into marketing and beer media, where we talk about the strategies that breweries can look at using to build their brands and get more exposure for their beers, plus all the different media outlets and platforms that breweries can tap into related to the beer industry. As always, if you are liking the podcast so far and find the content useful, please give us a follow and rating on whatever platform you're listening on. Also, follow us on all our social media handles, as well as visiting our website, www.buildmeabrewery.com.au, and much more complimentary content will be coming your way if you sign up to our mailing list. I'm Chris Hayton, your host, and this is the Build Me a Brewery podcast.